We cannot let their voices stifle our cause. This political crisis puts our head in their jaws. History is upon us. We've seen this before. We can never allow freedom to exit our shore. Good afternoon and welcome to the Trump Chronicle. I'm your host, Ray Brookstein. Ladies and gentlemen, it's hard to believe that we have lived through the first 3 years of the Trump presidency. When you consider the run-up to 2016, it's been closer to 4 years. Even to the casual observer who doesn't really follow the news that closely would probably still say that it's been quite grotesque. Honestly, between the daily assaults to remove the president, the Kavanaugh hearings, the Mueller probe, Russian meddling, and now Ukraine whistleblowing, it has been grotesque. Battle lines have been drawn. It's a super serious game being played right now for power and control over so much. So it's no wonder that this fight centers around an informational battleground at the highest levels with so much at stake in the 2020 election. Sometimes people forget that the presidential election is not one giant popular vote, but a series of 50 state elections to determine the electoral votes, with 270 being the magic number needed to become president. With this in mind, having 50 battlegrounds presents significant challenges to maintain election integrity, eliminating voter fraud, registration, counting, and getting accurate information. Activism exists on both sides of the political spectrum. Being able to get true, uncensored information, free from suppression, is the fight today, especially when you consider social media giants that can control and manipulate what we see and hear on a daily basis. My guest today to address what's going on with all of this is Meg at Houston, USA 6. Meg is a political activist who founded MAGA grassroots groups in 50 states known as Go Red, state by state, whose goal is to organize, disseminate information with the ultimate goal of achieving fair elections. She grew up in the Northeast, achieving a master's degree from NYU and Fairleigh Dickinson University. She has lived in New York, New Jersey, Vermont, and now Houston. Meg is a Twitter influencer, avid reader, bridge player, artist, and grandmother of five. So Meg, welcome to the Trump Chronicle on the America Out Loud Network.
Thank you very much. I'm pleased to be here.
You know, I want to get things started, Meg, by asking you, how important is it to get accurate information in order to maintain a fair election?
It's very important, and as important as it is, that's as hard as it is to get. You kind of have to read like 20 articles on the same topic to discover which is true and which is not.
So how do you go about separating fact from fiction?
Well, a lot of it has to do with reading more than one article, like I said. Mm-hmm. And then cut out the extreme on both sides and then look at the middle and then determine what you think is real. But I am a statistician and I'm able to look at polls and I'm able to look at trends and I'm able to take information from data, which is very important.
You know, we've had similar backgrounds as baby boomers. You know, our children might believe that we grew up in a vacuum. In reality, we did have an idealism of fairness, world peace, and being involved. And it's carried us forward, hasn't it?
It sure has. I always look at the 70s as our dress rehearsal, and now we're in the real play.
That is so well stated, because we forget a lot. Do you remember the JFK debates on television?
I do. It's very funny because back in those days when I was young and impressionable, I thought that JFK was gorgeous and right, that Nixon wasn't, and that's all I cared about back then.
Well, that's my point. In other words, what we were seeing And they refer to it as the making of a president, did they not? I think there were books written about it.
Yes.
Because he was the first to use social media, in effect, television, as his main medium. And you're right. He was very handsome, well-spoken. He was Irish Catholic, which was interesting because nobody ever thought that a Catholic would ever become president in those years. So he was really a groundbreaker. But then he was assassinated. And kind of our idealism, we were slapped back to reality, weren't we?
We were. And we felt that that family was our family. When Jackie had her miscarriage, the United States just mourned for her. And then, of course, when this happened, we all just went into shock. And nobody was around saying, oh, I hope he got assassinated. People would never talk about the presidency that way. There was a lot of respect for the presidency, and that is totally eroded.
You know, it really did shock us back to reality, but also reminded us that there are powerful forces at work, whether you're a conspiracy theorist or not, that were aimed at changing. Some people said it was a coup. And here we are, fast forward, 60 years. Can you believe that? He ran for president in 1960, and here we are in 2020, the election coming up. So media shaping is now at an extreme level. So how extreme has the media shaping become? Well, at least what I call media shaping or manipulation.
Well, back then, the television was used as our media, and whoever looked good on television attracted more influence. It was that way in the entertainment business. It was that way in politics, especially in politics. And we are not really looking at who's the best looking now. We're looking at the person that can speak the best or have a lot more to say. So it has shifted from the more superficial to the more in-depth or hysteria mongering, which is what the Democrats are really good at, and especially in manipulation.
So we have now several media giants. We've got Facebook, Twitter, Google. I mean, to some degree, Microsoft. I mean, it's all over. I'd like to, if you can give us a little background on how social media got formed, the formation of social media platforms.
Well, I can do it as a personal experience. I remember back in college days learning, being one of the first people to learn about the computer. And I remember carrying the cards to go to the computer lab, and you had boxes and boxes of cards just to be able to get onto the platform. And then suddenly the platform turned into like chat rooms, and people would get together just to talk or playing video games. And then from there, the newspapers got into the and became influencers as newspapers. And I don't remember when politicians really became popular on social media, but it just kept seeming like every year it would open more and more doors. And then suddenly computers were in the schools, and I was teaching computers to little kids. And it just kept creeping in, and then all of a sudden it was dominating the world. You know, like we weren't even noticing it until there was like rallies and riots, and people would use social media to make sure people show up.
You know, what they talk about the difference between being a publisher and an informational platform. What are the issues here? And were the social media giants given special exemptions when they were formed?
Well, I'd just like to backstep for 1 second here. When you had talked to me about being on the radio with you, mm-hmm. I had to think back to how I got involved in this to begin with. And I was an avid reader since elementary school, and I really liked reading information on World War II. And I was an avid reader on anything I could find on World War II. And it got to the point where I spoke to my mother and asked her, with all the atrocities that went on in Europe during Hitler time, how come she never did anything? Or how come the United States people never did anything? And you know what her answer was? The newspapers never wrote about it. They never let us know how bad it was.
Well, that's very interesting that you say that, because I've also had discussions with my own mother, and she was telling me that that was the first step that Hitler took, was to completely control what was written and the airwaves. So that there was really a blackout to a large degree coming out of Europe that was completely controlled by Hitler. That was the first thing he took out, was information. You could only hear what he told you. And to some degree, I think that's been ringing true in today's world, isn't it?
It sure is. And it's getting worse daily.
Now, and it seems, go ahead.
It seems like all of the newspaper stations, and it seems like they get a script at 5 o'clock in the morning, and everybody says the same thing for the rest of the day. And then the next day, they get another script. I mean, you can go from channel to channel, and they're basically saying the same thing on every channel.
It really is. So you're talking about not being a free platform. In other words, the information is being directed to one particular point of view, and you have an organization called Go Red State by State. What is your mission?
My mission is to vet and promote candidates, to examine voter fraud, to expose liberal activist judges, and to educate the people in my group. A lot of people in my group have no idea about what's going on in their state. And it's important that they know, so that they know what they're doing. I mean, education has been watered down, and people don't really get information that they need. And that's what we're doing. And people within the group know little parts of what's going on in their state, and we can share it and discuss it. And that's how they learn.
Now, you're talking about 50 states, correct?
Right.
You said that you're a statistician. How in the world what do you use to even track all of this? Do you have some kind of program or spreadsheet or, you know, way to even manage the information that's needs to be available in 50 states? I mean, I was scratching my head this morning thinking about, you know, what to ask you this afternoon.
Well, I have a private statistician that gives me unbiased information. I laugh at the polls that they say on television, because they're all Democrat-owned and they only tell you what they want you to know from the poll. They're totally inaccurate. And the perfect example is the election that Trump won.
Yes.
They don't know what they're doing. They just hire people in their groups, even the Rasmussen and the big ones. That's all they do. So you're not getting accurate. You don't even know what you're looking for. When you're doing statistics and what's going on, you need to have a hypothesis. So you ask yourself your question, what you're looking for, before you do the polls and the information. And then you start comparing it to trends, and then you work that way. There are none of these that are doing that anymore.
Why not?
Because the main people that were in some of the bigger polls have left, and they hire people that have not been trained. They have no idea what they're doing, and they are reporting inaccurate information.
You've been suppressed, have you not?
I have.
Tell us about what happened to your voice in this whole program.
Okay, so I have been running groups in all the states. And then I went to step two and ran state pages so that people that aren't in the groups can still have a place to go to read about the information going on in their state, what candidates are running, and what's happening with the candidates, and who we look at, who we vet to make sure that they're really good candidates. So that each state, they have a place to go to. I have GOP posting for them. I have candidates posting so we can promote them as they're running in their election. And one day I woke up and they were all suspended.
They suspended the state groups, the pages.
The pages. So that all of that information that I can share and unify the state is gone. And in like 1 week, I have elections in one state where the entire state is running, and they've lost that voice.
And so this was Twitter?
Yes.
Did they tell you why?
No. And so, then a couple of days later, in one of my emails for the state, I got a notice that they considered me a bot and manipulating minds. So in other words, if you promote a candidate, you're manipulating minds.
Are you kidding me?
No.
That you're a bot? I'm actually talking to a bot right now. You don't sound like a bot.
That's because we all sound differently.
They must be programming the voices now in bots. I mean, maybe we should, hook up to like these EKG machines, like when they do it over the phone to prove that you have a heartbeat.
Either that or we're all getting chipped while we're sleeping.
I mean, but there has to be, Twitter has terms of service, right? TOS.
Right.
So they accused you of being a bot and manipulating minds. How do you manipulate minds?
Because I'm telling people who a good candidate is.
Wow. That sounds like, do we have to sue these platforms? I mean, back to what I asked you before, is this an informational platform, Twitter and Facebook and Google, or are they publishers and subject to lawsuits? You know, that there could be legal consequences to what they're doing.
I think the government, Trump's administration, needs to set up groups for lawsuits. I think we need to do class action lawsuits. They do whatever they want because they get away with it. You know, my motto in all the groups is everything is constitutional unless you complain.
So they're just riding this thing and nobody is stopping them. And, you know, they claimed all along they were just informational platforms. In reality, they're manipulating. They're the ones that are manipulating minds. Yes. I read recently that even when Google put out in the 2016 election, a little note to go vote, because of how it was directed to only Democrats, they say it influenced millions of voters just by saying, go vote. So, I mean, we're dealing with an election coming up that's really significant. We see what's going on. They want to get rid of Trump now because they must realize that there's no way that they can win the election in 2020 straight up. So, what can you do to get your voice back? I mean, is it a fait accompli, or do you have are you able to communicate with them? Call somebody on the phone? What do you do?
Okay, you cannot call Twitter. They absolutely have no voice to voice. You just can't do that. I filed a complaint with the Better Business Bureau. They approached Twitter. Twitter told them I didn't file appeals, which I did. And she sent it back to me, and I had to reply again. That never happened. And the next thing I know, I decided that I would reapply my appeals, and I got a letter from them saying that the case is closed. Mm.
So your state groups, your state pages are permanently suspended right now?
I don't know.
Wow. Are there any that are still open, or that was the total?
They did all of them at the same time. One was only a day old.
It's unbelievable. I mean, we just can't stand this. On that note, the America Out Loud Truth continues in a moment.
It's your news and entertainment network. News blogs, informative podcasts, entertaining videos, or listen to 24/7 talk radio. on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We the People, AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
So, Meg, I just want to go back to a statement you said, you know, about government intervention. So you do feel that we need government intervention to neutralize the political reach of big tech and how they're using it.
I do. I really strongly feel that way because as an individual, we're not making a dent. Yesterday, I got a phone call from one of the members in my group who's a candidate running for office, that they filed a complaint in my behalf for these state pages, and he immediately got suspended for life.
Unbelievable. For life, just like that.
He's gone.
I guess there is some risk when you talk about government intervention in things. You know, whether it's healthcare, Medicare for all, you know, government takeovers of different industries. I mean, there's always a risk when the government puts their nose in things. For example, what would happen if they decide that WhatsApp is no longer available? I mean, kids would freak, and adults. A lot of people use WhatsApp. So sometimes overreach can be a problem as well. But I guess the question is, you know, where do we go from here? What concrete steps can we take to neutralize this thing?
I really think this, if people start suing, I believe it would end up in the Supreme Court because it's a direct attack on our Second Amendment, on our freedom of speech.
Correct.
And we absolutely, the more we let them get away with, the more they're going to test their boundaries. They're like little kids. You don't stop a little kid when they're misbehaving and set boundaries. They're going to keep misbehaving and see how far they can go. Well, that's just what they're doing.
You know, it's so true. When we don't stop bad behavior, it's really saying it rewards the behavior, doesn't it?
Exactly.
Right? So we are being trained to lay off. I mean, this is one of the problems I've always had in the last couple of years with called conservatives or Republicans or rhinos, that we are too nice, much too nice. You know, we want to have a, I like you, I always thought of myself more as a centrist, but I've had to become more radical in what I say and do because they are continuing to manipulate us and we're sitting there and taking it. I mean, can you believe that there are people like in Portland, Antifa, anti-First Amendment, that are beating people up in the streets? This would never happen. I mean, I remember the 1968 Democrat National Convention. Do you remember that?
Yes.
And I was livid watching the violence. And we objected to the violence, didn't we?
We
objected to the war in Vietnam. We objected to surveillance and intrusion into our civil rights. Yet these same people, us, what I call the hippies that have grown up, we don't question these same behaviors. It drives me crazy.
We question it, but we don't know the direction to take. One of the first things that our president should be doing is declaring Antifa a domestic terrorist group.
Yes.
And he has not done that. He should have done that from day one. The second thing that we do is we don't hold the politicians accountable. Do you remember that time that Cory Booker stood up and said, I'm going to leak confidential information because I'm Spartacus and this is my moment?
Yes.
They should have never let him get away with that with the Ethics Committee. He should have been reprimanded and whatever they do to people that do that. That should have been done. They gave him a walk. So sure, he had that walk. He can do it again now.
I feel the same way about recent, disclosures by Adam Schiff.
You know,
making up stories, not the real story. Making up a story, but not the story. And he's allowed to get away with it. I mean, we are circling around a hole that is so deep, we have no idea. It's like a whirlpool that I saw in The Journey to the Center of the Earth. Remember that movie when they were just circling and boom. Yeah. I mean, that, you know, diabolical events. We are so close. And it's hard to perceive it, Meg, because we look around. I live in a beautiful area in South Florida. I look at the ocean. I look at the big condominiums. People all around the country live in nice places. But under the surface, there is stealth going on that is serious. And I don't know what to do. But having a fair election, a vote, is probably our last bastion of hope, don't you think?
I do, and that's why in my groups, I try to get them to organize to become poll watchers, because this way they can stop it at the poll.
I see.
It's very important. I mean, there should be poll watchers at every poll. Wherever they vote, there should be watchers.
What other concrete steps can we take, do you think?
Well, that's an important one. And then also with poll watching, there can be judges. They can be trained to be judges, so they can judge on an incident right as it happens. There's got to be people there when they count ballots.
I mean, when I recently voted in South Florida, I had to show my driver's license ID. And then they ran it through a machine, and then I had to sign something, and it compared my signature to what was on the ID.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was pretty solid. You know, at least it identified me on the rolls as the same person. Yet, when I was visiting my friend in California, he said, okay, Ray, let's go to the polls. Okay, I'm gonna vote today. So we went to the polls, and he comes out. I waited outside. He comes out, and he tells me, you will not believe this, that people said, well, I used to live with my aunt, and I don't know, you know, it's not my address anymore, and they just sent them to another table where they could vote.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's things that are known as vote harvesting. What can you tell us about that? I never quite fully understood vote harvesting.
Okay, that way you can go to people's homes and have them fill out a ballot. And then you can bring them to the where they collect the ballots. So they're actually harvesting it from different apartments or old age homes or wherever you're going. But there's so much more with voter fraud than that. There's people that, like we did a study in Georgia, and we found that 300 Muslim voters voted out of a dorm in one of the local colleges. And we did a Google search, and the problem was that the dorm wasn't built yet.
So it was a fraudulent address?
Yeah.
I mean, you multiply this all over the place.
Right.
Because as I said in the beginning, the election is really a combination of 50 separate state elections, right?
Right.
So, you know, every district is important. Because if you win a district based on fraud, you're in the Congress. And if you win a district square up, you're in Congress. So it's every district in this country is at risk and is important. You know, you may say like, well, this is a blue state. And I suppose, now I have a question. Are they shutting down an organization like yours that's go blue state by state? Is there another organization that's like a mirror image of you for the Democrats?
I don't know, because they don't all copyright. I'm in the process of being copyright. I'm on like a list just waiting to go through the last step so that I could tell by copyright, but you can't tell if they're not.
How do you dig out from this? This must be very frustrating for you. I mean, if I woke up and realized that I had no longer had a Twitter account, and I have about, I don't know, a little under 30,000 followers. It's not that large. It's not that small. It's been like a year, almost 2 years of really hard work. And those of in my audience that know me know that I put up a lot of poetry. I'm always, you know, saying some things. I'm trying to have a voice. But if I woke up in the morning and I was no longer on Twitter, I tell you, I would be devastated. And maybe we're putting all of our eggs in one basket.
Well, I my main account has not been suspended.
Okay.
So I can still run my groups. They're just not as organized and as effective as with the state pages. I also have a website that people can go to that we're setting up in case Twitter just shuts down. It'll be set up similar to that.
And do you have the name of that website as we speak that you could announce to our audience?
Sure. It's goredstatebystate.com.
Okay. So that's goredstatebystate.com.
Yes.
And that's the main event now for what you're going to do. So I do want to ask you again, how do you dig out from this predicament?
Well, you have to figure out ways to combat what's going on. For example, if you go back to voter fraud, what Tom Fitton is doing and the rest of us are doing is getting them to purge the rolls, the voter rolls. Because we have, again, going back to that county that we examined, we found there were 1,000 people that voted that were over 118.
Wow.
The oldest person in the state of Georgia is 114. There's nobody even near her after that. So having 1,000 in one area, 118 years and older, is impossible.
Have you examined or have you estimated the effect of illegal immigration into your numbers, your statistics?
I haven't because we don't know who all the voters are. We have Democrat, Republican, and we have people that have voted, but there's so much going on with this voting registration over email on computers and at the DMV because they have no idea what they're doing. So it's really hard to track how many of our voters now are illegals.
That's amazing. So we really have no idea.
And plus the fact, a lot of the states are letting people with driver's license vote. And they can get, illegals can get driver's license in many states.
Just like that.
Just like that.
Just put in an application.
Yeah. And then a lot of the states allow online, same day registration. So you can walk into one place, register, and then you can walk into another place and register because it hasn't caught up to the person. We also have a problem with the colleges. The colleges allow the students to vote at college, but then they can go home and vote at their home. So they're double voting.
It's like the old story of one hand doesn't know what the other hand is doing, is it not?
It's exactly what it is.
I mean, that's what you're describing. And I mean, why don't we have, and maybe it's obviously too late for 2020. I mean, we're basically going to have to go with what we have. We're going to have to fight that suppression's going on. We're going to have to fight that we're dealing with misinformation. And with all of that, we won the election. I'm talking conservatives. We put Trump in the White House in 2016. It sounds to me that if we did nothing, we could win in 2020. But it does beg the question is how solid that is.
Well, there's one area that we haven't spoken about yet. In order to prove voter fraud, you also have to go to court. And you have to get a judge to rule on what you found. And we have so many corrupt liberal activist judges that we need to address. And I've been working hard on exposing these judges And we really need to work on that, because if we don't, we'll never get anywhere.
Have you been targeted?
For exposing the judges?
Yes.
No.
Okay. So you've been targeted from the standpoint of suppression of your state pages, but you have not been doxxed or anything like that personally?
No.
And your groups, there are group leaders in each state?
Only in states where I really trust the person that I pick.
Okay.
I'm very picky on who I put in charge.
I would think, and so. I mean, we can't even trust senators that get voted.
Right.
Right?
So I mean, I would rather do all the work than have somebody that's kind of...
Oh, my goodness. What is your day like?
Well, you know what's funny? We have an Apple Watch, and every week it tells you what your average time is on the internet. It's very
and?
Sad.
It's like,
what else do I do other than that?
Obviously, pee and poop and eat. I mean, that's about all that's left, and sleep. I mean, this is the problem we have. We are so addicted to social media. Now, you take a guy like Brad Pascal, who's a statistician, right? He's kind of behind the data. And who else was behind the data that was predicting that Trump would actually win and not what the polls were saying?
That's like individual people, and I'm not sure where they're getting their information. But mm-hmm. I will tell you, probably the person that had the most global insight into statistics would be Bannon.
Steve Bannon.
Yeah. He was the one that sat down with Trump at the very beginning of his campaign and saying, hey, you know what I'm seeing here? I'm seeing this across the world. We're having the same trends all over the world. And that's how we have to address this campaign. And he was 100% right.
It really is a global fight, isn't it?
It sure is.
I mean, this is at the base of the whole thing. I mean, it is really an election of whether we go with the Constitution or socialism, plain and simple. And, you know, I worry about, you know, our children and our grandchildren. Don't you? The influence.
That's why I'm fighting.
That's why you're fighting. And that's why I'm writing. You know, I just want to read a poem that I wrote and to let people know that I've just completed everything I need to publish my Trump Chronicle third year through poetry. And I just want to let everybody know that they can go to my website at rayraypoetryworld.net. That's rayraypoetryworld.net. Please do. I need all the sales I can get of the books to keep me moving forward. And one of the poems that will be in the book at the very end, because it's very recent, is a poem I wrote called Biblical Times Are Upon Us. Like David and Goliath, we're fighting for our life. They're squeezing out the air we breathe, censoring our right. The middle ground exists no more. You're either for him or you're not. The media won't tell the truth. Lies are all they've got. Our leadership is useless. They've abandoned ship. We the people are alone, bailing out each drip. The odds are stacked against us. Persecution dawn till dusk. Grab your sack of sticks and stones. Our survival is a must. We are taking fire. Patriots attacked. We used to be the honored class. Now they'll stab us in the back. We voted in the president. We put him in our house. They bugged the walls around him, his family and his spouse. We see there is no justice, no traitor dressed in chains. Sedition is their moniker till no patriot remains. So keep your Bible in your pocket, your hands upon your gun. Only when Goliath falls may we claim the battle's won.
Patriots, Through his widely acclaimed poetry books, The Trump Chronicle, Ray Ray has preserved for us these historic events that have surrounded the first 2 years of the Trump presidency. His fervent and patriotic poems capture in real time what could have easily been lost or forgotten. The Trump Chronicle is available on Amazon or through the America Out Loud bookstore. Pick up a few of these memorable books for your library. They are a must-have for our MAGA movement. Let's support this important patriotic poet and show host so we can continue to read history through poetry.
That was a great poem, Ray. It reminds me of where I think we are in society right now. It's the Book of Revelations, that we're at the final stage of good versus evil. And I truly believe that good is going to win.
I certainly, certainly hope so. I mean, we are in a fight of our lives, and I don't know if we're going to be able to neutralize the negative impacts of social media in time. They've taken away your voice to a large degree. We still have a pretty strong voice here at America Out Loud, in that we're not censored as long as we don't use specific, you know, four-letter words. At least it's a censor-free platform. But I guess the question that I have is, where do we go from here? We're about 13 months out from probably the most important election of our lives. I thought 2016 was the most important, and now I believe, because of the assault and all this whistleblowing, that we are right at it right now. If we can maintain the presidency through this process, and we get to an election, even if we have to crawl to get there, I think we'll be okay. But I am concerned. Do you have those same concerns?
I know we're going to be okay, because always good versus evil, the good wins. So the light against darkness, we're going to win. It's just going to be a real hard roll. This is not going to be easy. And people just can't sit back and be complacent, because that's not going to work. It's probably going to get worse before it gets better, although mm-hmm. It's hard to believe that. But I'm positive we're going to win.
That's great. And I know a lot of us feel the same way. I mean, we had a group that went to D.C. on July 4th, last July 4th. We had a great time. It was very interesting, because we were about 20 strangers, but friendly strangers that never met, excuse me, but we all met in Washington, and the feeling was phenomenal. And now there's rallies going on. I mean, the rallies are very important to us, and it's to show the world at least that there are people lining up to see this man in spite of all the negativity.
Have you ever been to a Trump rally?
I haven't. Have you?
I have. I went to the one in Houston. And he is a mastermind at organization. I just sat there and just watched what he was doing. And you don't get that feeling when you watch it on TV. But he's a master at organization. I was astounded by it.
When you say organization, what do you mean? Because I think a lot of people may not really understand that. You know, I can't even organize myself, and I'm just one person. You know, it's hard. Individually, it's hard. You're organizing a group of groups that affects 50 states. How do you do it, and what is really organization?
At the rallies or what I'm doing?
What you're doing.
Okay,
and then we can talk about Trump.
What I do is, like I said, I have to read many newspapers to get to where I think I know what's going on. I read people's predictions, which is important. And we come together as a group. The groups that work the best are the ones that are socially compatible. They want to be there. They want to talk about politics. They are not allowed to be disrespectful. Everybody has an opinion, and it's not a judgmental thing. We listen, we talk, and we work it out. And that's really important. Some groups are, like I said, better than others. Like I have some groups in New Mexico who they're so gung-ho now because, number one, Trump picked them as a state that could turn red. Trump came and visited, even though the Democrats tried to keep him out. And my idea with the group was that they were going to the rally and they were going to the state fairs, and we turned them into voter registration.
Brilliant.
And at the state fair, they got 500 people to register.
You know, every vote counts. That was a brilliant idea, really. And that's straight up. I mean, that's honest and that's good registration. I want to ask you, you know, you lived in a lot of different places. Tell us about your personal metamorphosis.
Okay, so I started out in New York City, which is considered liberal, even before de Blasio got there.
Yes.
And then moved to New Jersey, which is also liberal. And then stayed in Vermont for over 20 years, which is the only state that called themselves a socialist state.
So you went from liberalism to socialism. And you took your kids with you?
Yes. And then down to Texas, which is very conservative. So that was like my travel through. But one of the things I was going to say, you were talking about what life was like in the 70s.
Yes.
I went to the original Woodstock.
Did you really?
Yeah.
I stayed home. I know that I remember the summer. A lot of my friends went, but I never did. I think I was just a little too straight at the time.
Well, my stepfather was in the New York Police Department, and he was in charge of flying everybody in and out of Woodstock, all the stars. So that's how dichotomy was. And
he was a pilot?
He was the security.
Okay.
So I remember being at Woodstock, being in like we had developed our own city because it was that many people. And I kept saying to myself, my God, I'm in the middle of making history. And you really knew that. I mean, there was never a concert like that before.
No.
And then music changed because they started doing their songs. They were political songs. We don't have that today.
What do we have today with songs? Is it all just like rap or country? There were people like Bob Dylan, the Beatles, Donovan, Eric Anderson, people that were very influential, especially Bob Dylan and Jimi Hendrix, Janis Joplin. I mean, the music was really amazing. And it was about activism. Again, as I mentioned earlier, I feel like that activism, it disappeared. I mean, we were the same people, but we're not taking that same, the thing that drove us is like no longer there. It's like we've evaporated our energy when it comes. I mean, I look at the ACLU as an example. They were always behind civil rights, but now they won't fight for civil rights. Why is that? What has happened to us baby boomers?
I think some people in the baby boomer era are tired and they just go with the flow.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are a lot more baby boomers that are fighting that we just don't know who they are.
Mm-hmm.
I think that music was a common bond. And it helped people join in even just singing the songs that were all activism songs. At that point, we were working on civil rights. That was changing. We were working on feminism. That was changing. The whole music industry changed between Motown and country singing and folk singing. And it was all having a lot of the same themes.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't have that anymore. The theme is hate Trump.
Hate Trump.
That's not a theme.
No, it's not a theme. It's a trend. It's a fad. It's an attack. So it's a great analogy, because I wanted to try to examine the difference between activism of yesteryear and today. You know, that's an important question. Where do we go today?
Well, today we're violent. I mean, that's our activism. They don't know how to show it in any other form. And that's why they're attacking our institutions, because they really think that if they yell louder, or they fight, or they kill, that they're going to change the world. And that's not the way to do it. I mean, we know that. We've been there.
I mean, I don't think we can change the world as individuals, but we can certainly express ourselves and join groups and have like-mindedness. We conservatives are just very, very disappointed in the Republicans, or what we know as RINOs. I mean, we have experienced the last 3 years of no legislation with one agenda only. And I say to myself, you know, I voted Democrat growing up. We probably, maybe you were different. Maybe you were more independent, you know, with the places you went. But, you know, now it's like you don't want to be in this Democratic Party. It's no longer the party. It's all about hating Trump. And if they had taken the last 3 years, in my opinion, and focus on a platform that was centrist, I think they would stand a better chance. But they've tied themselves to the wrong horse. You know, the AOCs, the Tlaibs, the RINOs. I mean, I think the average American is going to reject this. Do you agree?
Oh, well, I think that they didn't tie themselves to the squad. They were bullied into getting in there. I mean, they were not allowing them to do anything. And you can't have a party based on bullying. And that's what they're doing now. They've been bullying Trump for 3 years. They're trying to bully all the conservatives in office. They're trying to bully the police. They're trying to bully the judges. They're trying to bully the Supreme Court. They're a bunch of bullies. And the squad is the leader of the pack. And nobody is telling them they can't do it. They should. Some of them should be in jail. And that's not happening because they keep getting passes. Well, if you keep getting a pass, why are you going to stop?
No, there's no incentive. I mean, it's just, as I said, they're actually rewarding the behavior of a guy like Cory Booker to call himself Spartacus, or Schiff to just make up something in front of the House Judiciary Committee. I mean, unbelievable stuff is going on. And I guess, you know, I'd like to spend the last couple of minutes talking about what are the lessons that we have to learn here. Because we really are at a crossroads. I mean, my good friend, who's also active on our network, is Ava Armstrong. She talks about that we're at a crossroads between liberty and tyranny. And I believe she's right. We are at a crossroads. So what do we learn from all of this? You've gotten shut down. You're very organized, passionate person, great background. What do you do? What is there to learn right now?
Well, I was thinking about that because I think one of the things that we have to do is when any candidate becomes elected, they have to sign something that they will follow what they're elected for. I mean, I'm sick and tired of these people getting elected and then they change their party. That shouldn't be allowed. That should be illegal.
Any other examples?
I think people like Cory Booker, when he breaks the law, that the ethics committee is not going to give him a slap on the hand. He's going to be held responsible. I think the hush fund with them covering up all these sexual exploits, I think every one of those names should be printed out. I don't think they should be allowed to go sneaking off on holidays and using our money. I just think that if people are not held accountable, they just don't care.
They have no care in the world. And, you know, we know a House representative has 2 years, a senator six, the president four. We really need term limits. Is just another side discussion that I believe in.
Well, that is something that they've already found the loophole to term limits. What you do is you do your 2 terms in the Senate, and then you go to 2 terms in the House. And then you can go back to the Senate and just go back and forth. So you're never a term limit.
Could you imagine if Trump tried to become a third term? It would be all hell would break loose. You know, he kids about it, just to trigger them. But meanwhile, like you say, the senators and the House members are playing the same game. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if AOC becomes a vice presidential candidate. Can you imagine if she's one breath away from the presidency? I mean,
it's a scary thought.
I just had this thought the other day. But so much is possible. But, you know, I just want to wrap by thanking you, Meg. And I guess I want to ask you, is there anything we can do to help you free yourself from this stuff that's going on to you?
If people could get in touch with their representatives and their senators, because that's the only way it's going to come back. It's going to affect their elections, too.
That's true. I mean, I have always said we all have a skin in this game, and it's a very serious game. And so, audience, please, we know the suppression that's going on. We cannot sit back and just let ourselves be manipulated out of the 2020 election by, you know, invisible boards of directors of social media giants who hate Trump as much as the Democrats hate Trump. And we can't even put a finger on them. But we can put pressure on our representatives, as Meg very well said. And so, you know, we have to take this fight directly to the people that could affect some change in our Congress. I mean, that's where it has to happen. In the meantime, I want to thank you, Meg, for coming on. I'll do what I can to help get information out about your cause. And on that note, love Ray Ray and a poem.